Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back this Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime stories, beginning this week with Night Beat. We'll hear Old Home Week, their episode from September 4th, 1950. Then it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, in the Lewis Spence case, his episode from March 5th, 1950.
Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began with a girl fighting for her life in the rapids of a rushing stream and ended in the quiet depths of a poisoned cup.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
A guy in my business has to take his vacation whenever he can get it. And the best I could get was a string of short weekends at a little resort town called Paradise Lake. It's only a few hours' drive from Chicago with lots of woods and streams. It's a lovely spot located just outside my income. It was after one of these weekend, if you'll pardon the expression, vacations, that I was heading for Chicago in time to get back on the job that night. I checked out of my rented cabin and had just crossed the bridge over Rocky Creek when suddenly I saw her. I jammed on the brakes. The girl lay on the edge of the road, unconscious, my front wheels almost touching her. Hey, you, what's the matter? I got out of the car and ran over to her. The late afternoon sun gleamed on her wet, disheveled hair, and she was soaking wet. I could see tracks where she'd climbed up from the rapids below to the edge of the road. I chafed her wrists and slapped her hands a little. Hey, wake up. Can you hear me? What happened? Come on, baby. Snap out of it. That's the girl. You look like you've been half drowned, beautiful. Well, she's still out. Well, better get you into my chariot before you catch pneumonia or some other car finishes you off. Up we go. Funny how silk clings when it's wet. I went back to my cabin. I got her inside and put her on the sofa. Then I started the fire in the fireplace and got the oil stove going in the kitchen. Eagle Scout Stone was doing his good deed for the day. I'd be late for the office tonight, but she looked as though it might be worth it.
Who's in there?
I came out of the kitchen and saw that she was sitting up, her big gray eyes wide and a little dazed.
Who are you? Where am I?
The name is Randy Stone. Drink this.
What?
Go on, go on. St. Bernard would have brandy, but on my salary, you'll have to settle for this. Drink it down.
How did I get here?
We'll exchange questions later. All right, now, down the hatch. That's the girl.
Oh, I'm soaked.
Better pull this blanket around you. There.
I'll be warm in a minute.
No, you're shivering. You better wrap it a little tighter.
You can let go.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I'll put some more wood in the fire. What's your name?
Pat Torrance.
What did you do, slip and fall into the creek?
Fall?
Now, don't tell me you were in swimming, or is that a new style in French bathing suits?
No, I didn't fall.
All right, easy now, easy now. Now, what happened?
I was pushed.
You were what?
She pushed me. She tried to kill me.
The girl got up, one hand at her throat, her eyes wide with frightened memory. The blanket fell away from her shoulders, revealing a lovely outline all the way down.
I remember. I was standing on that high bank overlooking the rapids.
Yeah? Well, who did it? Who was she?
I'd better go. Thanks for...
Whoa, wait a minute. Take it easy. Get warm for us. You'll get sick.
I really must go. Francine's probably worrying about what's happened to me. I've got to get back.
Francine?
Francine, we have a cabin on the lake.
Oh, I must have been blind to have missed you all the time I've been here.
We just got in today.
I see. Well, whoever pushed you in certainly didn't lose any time, did she?
I'd rather not talk about it.
Maybe I better drive over to your cabin and get your girlfriend to bring over some dry clothes and then round up a cop on the way back.
Oh, no. No, please, not the police.
What's everybody got against the police? Why not?
Not right now, anyway. I want to talk to Uncle Ben first. Her father.
Uncle Ben?
Well, he's really not my uncle. I mean, well, he raised me when I was a kid. I owe him an awful lot.
Ben who?
Mason. He runs the hotel here, Paradise Inn.
Wait a minute. You mean Ben Mason's daughter, Margaret? Why would she want to kill you?
Because she hates me. Oh, I shouldn't have listened to Francine. She said I might get a chance to rest, to straighten things out in my own mind. Then when we get here, I find Marge already on the scene.
Yeah, but Pat, what makes you think it was Marge who pushed you?
Oh, it was her, all right. She's broken up my marriage, stolen my husband, and now... Now she's tried to kill me.
Well, beautiful, all I can say is that any man who'd pass you up for Marge Mason is the kind of a guy who'd marry Hedy Lamarr for her money. Just what did happen?
Well, I'd been walking along the creek.
Uh-huh.
Francine was busy getting the cabin fixed up, and I was going to the store. When I got to the little footbridge, I suddenly saw Marge standing there. I had no idea she'd be here at Paradise.
Why, Pat, darling. Dad said you were here, but it didn't seem possible. You and Francine together. Ed's old girlfriend sharing cabin with you.
Francine Moore was never, as you put it, my husband's old girlfriend, and you know it.
Really, dear? Hasn't Francine ever mentioned it? Well, no matter. There comes a period in every man's life, but she was just a comma in his.
Why, you unscrupulous.
How naive can you get? Ed's played the field all his life, and he always will. You never really understood him.
I thought I understood you. I looked on you as if you were my own sister. I trusted you.
That's what Grace used to say about you.
Grace?
Yes, dear, Grace Rainey, another member of Ed's harem. She's here at Paradise Lake, too, you know.
Grace Rainey? What do you mean?
Oh,
why,
Dad,
is she...
gave her a job as a hostess at the inn. The same big blonde cow. But you know Ed. He always did suffer from high blonde pressure.
Ed was never interested in Grace.
Wasn't he? Don't play innocent with me, darling. It's really jolly, you, Grace, Francine, and I, together once again in the old hometown.
Old home week.
All we need is Ed on the scene. And I shouldn't be surprised if he weren't on his way.
What? You mean he's coming here?
Come now, pet. How corny can you get? Cut the act. You must have known he was planning to spend a few days here. Why else did you come?
To get away from him. From everything that reminded me of him.
Oh, please. Why don't you do the decent thing? Call it quits. Give him his divorce.
Why? So you can profit by what you've done to me?
I've tried to be patient with you. I've gone a long ways to try to reason...
Keep right on going. Don't ever let me see you again.
All right, Pat. If that's the way you want it. But if you insist on clinging to him like a spider just to spite me... You've only yourself to blame if anything happens.
What do you mean? Is that a threat?
Take it any way you wish. Any way you wish.
And Marge just walked away and left you there?
Yes.
Then how could she have pushed you?
Why, I don't know. She must have come back. There was no one else around.
Well, she had the motive, I suppose, but
oh,
still...
it's like a bad dream. To think Marge could do a thing like that. We used to be so close. We were even brought up together when we were kids.
All right, now, all right. Everything will be all right. Use my shoulder if you want. You want a handkerchief?
Thanks. What did you say your name was?
Randy Stone.
Oh, you've been very sweet, Randy. I must be a sight to behold.
Well, on the contrary, you're a sight to beheld.
I'll bet.
That's a lousy pun, I know.
Anyway, this fire's nice and pleasant.
Yeah, yeah. Say, maybe I better fix up something to keep you from catching cold.
Oh, I'll be all right.
No. I got some stuff left in the kitchen and in this bottle. I'll fix you a hot toddy.
Oh, don't bother, Randy.
It's no bother at all. After you drink this, I'll drive over to your cabin and get your friend Francine.
All right.
Where is your cabin?
Just past the inn across the road.
Mm-hmm. I'll have this ready in just a few seconds.
Well...
So we had some hot toddy together. I hadn't had all the ingredients, maybe, but at least the essentials were in it, and it wasn't too bad. I got her to tell me something about herself. Her struggles, her dreams, her telephone number. Suddenly I realized how late it was getting.
Late? Oh, golly, it is at that. Francine will be frantic.
Yeah, not to mention my boss when I get back to Chicago tonight.
Your boss?
Yeah, the night editor.
You mean you're a reporter?
Any objections?
Yes, you'll put this in the paper.
Oh, why not?
Oh, you mustn't. It'll hurt Uncle Ben. If he finds out what's happened between Marge and me, he'd be terribly upset.
Yeah? Well, now look, Dollface, you just watch your step and make sure you don't get any free publicity yourself in the obituary column. That'd really upset dear old Uncle Ben. Now, you sit right here until I get back. If Marge or whoever it was who pushed you in catches you alone, there's no telling what might happen. I guess I just never could understand the feminine psychology. Bunch of dames trying to bump each other off over a guy who was never any good to begin with. Give me a nice, clean, masculine murder any time. At least it makes some sense. I drove back toward the inn, following the road along the course of the stream. And then suddenly ahead of me, I saw a couple of flares burning in a car parked across the road with its headlights focusing on the rushing stream below. I pulled up. A big white sheriff star was painted on the car's side. Some men were working along the edge of the stream, and a small crowd was watching. I got out, walked down the bank toward the edge of the creek. There were two girls standing at the edge of the crowd. One was a tall blonde who was crying softly, and the other was Marge Mason. Hiya, Marge.
Oh, Randy Stone.
What's going on?
They're dragging the creek.
Dragging the what for?
They're trying to recover the body.
The body? Whose body?
A friend of ours. A girl named Pat Torrance.
I see. What happened?
Grace says she jumped in.
Yes, I saw her.
Oh, you did? When was this?
That's a short time ago. I was on my way back to the inn from the store when I heard her cry out. For a moment, I could see her face through the trees as she fell in. It was
Randy, this is Grace Rainey. She acts.
I noticed.
Randy Stone, a reporter from Chicago, Gracie.
Oh? A reporter?
Could you get help? Wasn't there anyone else around?
No. It was so dark. I didn't see anyone. And she couldn't swim. I knew she couldn't swim. She couldn't swim.
Grace can't either.
I can't act either. What makes you think she jumped?
This wasn't the first time she tried to commit suicide.
That's right.
How do you know that, Marge?
Why, her husband told me, Ed. Just a week ago, he tried to persuade her to go to a sanitarium and take treatment.
When did he tell you that?
Why, just this afternoon.
This afternoon?
Marge was talking to him on the phone when I ran in and told her what had happened. It was awful.
You mean talking to him long distance to Chicago?
Why, no, Mr. Stone. Ed Torrance got here this morning. He's right here in Paradise Lake.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Gloom becomes a thing of the past on Tuesday, September 19th, over most of these NBC stations, when genial Art Linkletter returns to prove once again that people are funny. Check your blues at the door, because there's no room for them in the merriment when the fortunate prize-winning contestants go through a wide variety of mad antics on People Are Funny. That date, September 19th. And it's important for another reason. It's the day that Fibber McGee and Molly and their delightful guests at 79 Wistful Vista will be back where the chimes are. NBC. Now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
Well, the police started dredging the creek at Paradise Lake for the body of Pat Torrance after her friend Grace Rainey said she'd seen a jump in. We stood around watching them search for the body, Grace and another of Pat's one-time gal friends, Marge Mason. So many girls involved in this mix-up, I was beginning to feel like a lone male at a ladies' seminary tea. I wondered if I should tell the gals that at this very moment, Pat was sitting in my cabin alive and kicking.
Poor Pat.
Marge kept talking as we watched them drag the stream.
Complex. Ed said she even thought drivers were trying to run her down in the streets.
Well, why isn't Pat's husband here? Ed knows what's happened, doesn't he?
Yes, Marge told him on the phone.
I don't know why he isn't.
Which one of those officers is the sheriff?
You'll probably find the sheriff in their car up there, Mr. Stone, with the white star on the door, see?
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you, Grace. Promise or no promise, I figured it was time to bring the law in on Pat's story that Marge or someone had tried to murder her. There was a solitary figure sitting in the sheriff's car, a heavy-set old dame built like a battleship and a voice to match.
Yeah, what is it?
I'm looking for the sheriff. Have you seen...
I'm the sheriff.
You?
Pick up your chin, mister. What do you want?
Well, I beg your pardon.
I know. Well, I'm not the only woman sheriff in the world, Buster. There have been others. You're a stranger here, I take it.
Well, yes, yes. My name is Stone from the Chicago Star.
Chicago Star, eh?
Yeah.
By thunder, every time you turn up a wet rock, you find a Chicago Star reporter underneath.
I don't understand what you mean.
Oh, you don't, eh? Now, look, Bob. I don't know how you got here so quick, or why you think a suicide in this county is important enough for the high and mighty Chicago Star to send a reporter.
Well, it's past.
But I don't care, see? And what's more, as far as I'm concerned, you can skedaddle right back to Chicago.
Yes, sir.
What's that?
I'm sorry, I'm just confused.
You get no cooperation from my office, you understand?
Well, frankly, no.
I haven't forgotten those stories your paper printed about me during my campaign for office.
Well...
So I was a joke, eh? I didn't have a chance, did I?
Well, now, look, I'm sorry, but I personally didn't have a thing to do...
Go back and tell those morons who run your paper that Dolly Maynard was elected, in case they haven't found out yet.
Well, maybe it's caught up with
them. I'm a machine politician, and as long as I'm in office, none of their hack reporters will get a single story out of me.
Yeah,
and
well, I
did.
What kind of a hen house had I gotten into here? Dames. Well, I left her there sputtering, her fuse still burning. If the sheriff of Paradise Lake indicated the local level of sanity, maybe it was just as well I kept my mouth shut as Pat had asked me to. So I drove on past Paradise Inn to Pat's cabin across the road. The light inside shone through the drawn blinds. Pat's roommate, Francine, was apparently still there. I got out, walked across the road, and up the short gravel path to the cabin door. I could hear voices as I approached.
Oh, how awful. How utterly awful. I know, Francine. It's hard for me to believe myself.
It was Pat. I thought you said you'd stay put at my cabin.
Oh, forgive me, Randy. I just couldn't. I'm so nervous there all by myself. Come in, won't you? Oh, Francine, this is the man who rescued me, Randy Stone.
Oh?
This is Francine Moore, my very best friend.
How many best friends can a girl have?
Oh, I'm so grateful for what you've done, Mr. Stone. Pat's my dearest little old friend, and if anything had happened to her...
Well, everybody else thinks something has happened to her.
What? What do you mean?
Well, when you hiked up the road, didn't you notice the crowd by the creek?
The creek? No.
Well, they're dragging it for your body.
My... Oh, no.
Oh, yes. How could you miss seeing it?
I didn't come over the road. I cut through the meadow. I didn't want anyone to see me all wet.
Oh.
Well, what are they... I mean, what makes them think that Pat
is in the... You told the police.
No, not me, baby. They were already looking for you. When I came by, everybody thinks you jumped in.
Jumped in?
Yeah.
Pat, you didn't.
Of course not. I told you how it happened. I was pushed.
Well, Mr. Stone, did anyone see her? How would they know?
Well, Grace Rainey says she saw her.
Oh, Grace.
You mean she says she actually saw me jump in?
She seems to think she did.
Pat, darling, couldn't you have just slipped and thought perhaps...
No, I tell you, I was pushed. I didn't just imagine it, Francine. Why do you look at me that way? Someone did push me deliberately.
Oh, now, darling, why don't you go to bed now? And in the morning, I'm sure we'll all have a more sensible outlook on everything. Listen, I'll fix you a cup of hot chocolate. Go on, dear, go to bed.
Oh, Francine, you're a love. Good night, Randy. You've been wonderful. Thanks so much for everything.
Yeah, send me a medal. Good night, baby.
Poor dear Pat.
What does that mean?
What?
The way you said that.
Oh, come into the kitchen. Oh, the poor darling has been under an awfully severe nervous strain the past month or two.
Did you know that Ed's here, too?
No.
Yeah, the Don Juan husband of hers, Marge, was talking to him.
Here? At Paradise Lake?
Yeah.
Why would he come here?
Well, he probably heard it was open season on Dane's.
Oh, no. Now, seriously.
Well, Pat seems to think it might be on account of Marge.
That's strange. Oh, would you like some hot chocolate?
No, thank you. No, thank you. I better be on my way now that Pat's in good hands. Nice to meet you, Francine.
See you again sometime, I hope.
Well, you never can tell. Good night.
Goodbye, Randy, and thanks again.
I went back to my car. I got in. I lit a cigarette. I sat there for a while, wondering where Ed Torrance had been when Pat was pushed into the creek. There are a lot of things I began to wonder about, Ed. What kind of vitamins did a guy have to eat to get into his league? I was about to turn on my lights and start back to the inn to find him when I saw the dim figure of a girl stealing around from the back of the cabin. It was Pat. I opened the car door quietly. The dim figure halted suddenly, tense and looking my way. I couldn't see her face, but there was something about her that was different. No, it wasn't Pat. It was someone else. I jumped out, and as I did, the girl fled toward the trees, a filmy scarf streaming behind her.
Wait!
I ran across the road as she disappeared. I started running down the road after her, but she crossed it and disappeared into a grove bordering the inn grounds. I thought I saw her go up the veranda of Paradise Inn, and I bounded after her. There was no one around except a couple of elderly dowagers in rocking chairs. They stopped rocking when they saw me, and I asked them, did a girl just come in?
A girl? Which girl, young man?
A girl, any girl.
Not very particular, are you?
Oh, never mind. And just then, over the side railing, hurrying up the garage driveway, I saw her. I turned and ran down the steps. It was just a glimpse, the lights from the inn glinting on her reddish-brown hair as she hurried past, heading for the guest cottages and back. Hey, wait a minute.
Yes?
What? Marge, it was you.
Why, Randy? Whom did you think it was?
Didn't you just come from behind Pat's cabin?
Whatever are you talking about? What would I be doing there?
I'm sorry. I thought I saw you. Well, never mind.
What's the matter?
You seen Ed tonight?
Ed?
Yeah.
Why, no. Why do you ask?
Well, I just wondered why he came here today.
Well, he must have found out Pat had come here, I suppose.
He phoned you said.
Well, yes. Why are you asking all these questions?
I'm a reporter, remember, dear?
Grace is fixing some coffee at the cottage we're sharing here and back. Why not join us before you go?
I wouldn't miss it.
This way.
So you're bunking with Grace?
Yes, the inn's so crowded I had to move in with her in one of the guest cottages. The one right over there, with the lights on.
Oh, yes, I see. Looks like she forgot to draw the blinds.
Yes, and the window's wide open. I hope she isn't under...
Well, it's a warm night. Looks like she's curled up in that easy chair for the evening, she and that telephone.
That woman, she simply monotonizes the telephone. Right around this way, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
But, why'd you have to leave without at least telling?
Wait.
At least
what's the matter?
Quiet.
Marge put her fingers on my lips, and we stood there by the cottage door motionless.
You're on your way back.
Grace Rainey's voice came through the open window clearly, and with every word, Margaret Mason grew more tense and strained, and her eyes more stormy.
But Ed, darling,
this Ed again, this Superman.
Yes, I know, dear. Marge Rainey was a bit stuffy. I can imagine how surprised you were when you called the cottage and she answered the phone.
Why, of all the...
Steady.
Yes, I know, darling. Well, Randy's here, too, but what of that? All that water in the creek, you might say. There's nothing to stop us from getting married.
Married?
No, dear. They haven't found the body. The Pat's dead. How do I know? Well, you see, darling, I saw her pushed in. Yes, that's right. Pushed.
She did it.
Well, let's face it, darling, we both wanted her dead. So, now our wish is granted. We're free to marry.
Free, is she? So, you're free, are you?
Marge.
Not for long you won't be, you two-timing, double-crossing sheep, Judith.
Easy.
You'll be in jail within 24 hours for murder.
Yes, again, dearie. You see, I know who killed Pat Torrance.
My goodness. What's all the commotion?
Francine. Francine Moore. Little Miss Dixie stood in the doorway that opened on the little back porch. When I saw her standing there, a long silk scarf trailing over one shoulder, I knew at once it had been she who'd come from around back of the cabin, hoping not to be seen.
What are you doing here, Francine?
Oh, I thought I'd drop in to straighten out a few little things for both of you. You and Marge.
Francine, what do you mean?
If you thought Ed had any intention of marrying either of you, I'm terribly sorry. Because you're wrong.
What?
Ed and I are being married as soon as his divorce is final.
Oh, you are, are you?
Yes, Grace, we are.
Well, congratulations. How many of you is he marrying?
I'd say those congrats if I were you, Randy. Because she isn't marrying anybody. Little Miss Moore is going to the electric chair for murder.
Grace.
Now, wait a minute.
I saw Francine push Pat in the creek.
Oh, how very amusing. So I murdered Pat. Well, do you know where she is? At our cabin, asleep in her own bed.
How long do you think that story will stand up?
Ask Randy.
Well, I left Pat at their cabin, all right, just a few minutes ago.
She's got you to lie for her, has she?
Well, I shouldn't have left Pat alone, Randy. She's not well. No telling what she's liable to do, but I felt I owed it to these ladies to set their minds at rest, if they have any minds left.
You're not getting away with it, Francine. I'm going to the police right now.
Come back here. Grace, come back. I'm warning you.
Francine, drop that gun.
Let go. Take your hands off.
Drop it. Do I have to break your arm?
Oh,
so you came here to find out how much Grace really knew? Now you know the game's up. Killing won't do you any good. You're finished. You're through.
Oh, stop.
All right, drop it.
Stop.
The gun exploded as it hit the floor. Francine's soulful brown eyes widened in an instant of horror, and then suddenly she slumped. And I know that little Francine had caught one of her own bullets. Marge and I bent over her.
Randy, is she...
Get on the phone quick. Get a doctor.
Yes.
Francine. Francine, do you hear me?
Randy. Go.
Mary,
go to
Marge.
The cabin.
I'm in the cottage.
Pat.
To bring a doctor over here.
Pat, what about Pat, Francine? Is she all right?
Pat mustn't drink the hot chocolate. Poison.
Poison? I didn't bother with a car, but covered 100-plus yards between the inn and Pat's cabin in an unofficial world speed record. I yanked open the cabin door, rushed through the room and into Pat's bedroom.
Randy, get out!
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I came for some hot chocolate. Did you drink any?
Hot chocolate? Have you gone crazy? Of course not. Can't you see I've just come out of the tub?
Yeah, I didn't mean... I'll wait outside. Get your clothes on, beautiful. You're having more company.
What? Who?
Well, the sheriff. She'll want some of that hot chocolate, too, so don't touch it until she gets here. You understand? Well, it's 4 a.m. in Chicago again, and tonight's story is full of women as a sultan's harem. As the French say, cherchez la dame. And on this trip, I found plenty of them, with a moral to go with each one. For Marge, hell hath no fury like a woman tripped up trying to skip with another woman's husband. And for Gracie, gentlemen prefer blondes, on the theory, no doubt, that where there's light, there must be heat. For little Francine, well, she tried to take life cheerfully, the life, that is, of anyone who stood in her way. And as for Pat, well, you don't need any moral for her. A girl with a map like she has can usually find somebody to read it. Yep. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Irvin Ashkenazy with music by Frank Wirth. In tonight's cast were Barbara Fuller, Rose Hobart, Shirley Mitchell, Eileen Prince, and Martha Wentworth. Frank Lovejoy will next be seen in Milton Sperling's production, Three Secrets, released by Warner Brothers. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Sunday marks the return of Theater Guild on the air with Rosalind.
National Broadcasting Company presents Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Mr. Diamond, the reason you're here is because I want someone to talk to the mayor. I don't know whether it was explained to you or not, but unless His Honor has done away with himself by noon, a lot of people are going to get hurt.
Including yourself.
Oh, that doesn't really matter. You see, in making my escape, a guard attempted to stop me. I had to kill him.
Here's another exciting half hour with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
I'm a detective agency. There's no corpse like an old corpse.
Oh, Rick, that's awful.
Yeah, but what am I going to do? I can't be witty and handsome at the same time.
Well, don't be greedy. Just concentrate on one of them.
Oh, you're pretty nothing today.
Why don't you come on over and we'll both try and improve?
Shame on you. You know I've got to work.
Oh, have you got a client?
Well, not yet, but I've set bear traps all the way down the hall.
Well, now that's silly. How can you be sure you'll catch a client?
Well, I can't be, but, oh, I get so lonesome up here with no one to talk to. It's fun setting broken legs.
You're impossible.
Diamond!
Oh, my gosh.
What's wrong, Rick?
Those traps. I think I've caught something terrible.
Hmm?
Diamond, I gotta talk to you.
Who is it, Rick?
Sergeant Otis. Says he's gotta talk to me, but I'll be darned if I'll teach him how.
Oh, say hello for me.
Helen says hello, Otis.
Tell her hello, then get off the phone. This is serious.
Hey, what's with you? Somebody steal your catnip?
Can't you stop being funny, Shamus? I mean it. This is serious.
Helen, I'll call you back.
Why, something wrong?
Well, Otis looks worried, and he's making sense for the first time in 11 years.
Oh, well, call me later and tell me about it. Bye.
Bye. Now, Sergeant, what's on your pretty
mind? I want you to come down to the station with me in a hurry.
Of course, you'll think this is a silly question, but why?
You remember Lewis Spence?
Lewis Spence?
About 4 years ago. Caught him running around sticking dynamite under the homes of some of our city officials.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Socialistic nut. Put him away, didn't they?
Yeah, crazy as they come. Well, he's out.
What do you mean he's out? If they cured his head, he'd still face a lot of years up the river.
Oh, he ain't cured. Not a bit he ain't cured.
You mean he busted out?
Yesterday. Now, do me a favor and come on down to the station.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute and take it easy. What's going down to the station got to do with Lewis Spence?
He's down there with the lieutenant.
Well, great. Put them both in fancy jackets and send them home.
We can't. He walked in 20 minutes ago and asked to see the lieutenant. I didn't recognize him, so I let him in. Now we can't get him out.
Well, why the devil can't you?
He won't let us in, and he won't let the lieutenant out. He's sitting there holding a big bomb, and it's ready to go off.
Well, it looks like a convention.
Everyone's trying to think of something to
well,
do.
Why is Spence doing this? What's he going to do, just sit in there?
You'll really get a boot out of this, Shamus. If the mayor don't jump off the top of the city hall by noon, Spence blows up the whole 5th precinct.
What?
That's right.
Hey, Otis, get Diamond in there. It's 11 o'clock.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Rick.
What do you mean, get me in there?
Didn't you tell him, Otis?
No, I ain't had time.
Well, come on, come on. Why me? What do you want me in there for?
Spence wants someone Levinson can give direction to. He says no cop. Levinson buzzed out and told us to get hold of you.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Talk to the lieutenant on the intercom. Spence won't know who's walking through the door and maybe blow the whole joint up.
Otis, you amaze me.
Oh, I ain't so smart with Spence's idea. Come on. Here. Go ahead.
Walt.
Rick?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Diamond's outside now.
Okay, tell him to come in. But just him. Anyone else...
Okay, okay. Rick, come on in, but no one else.
All right. Otis, stick right here. I may want to talk to you.
Sure. Dime.
Yeah?
On nothing.
You're so right.
Hello, Rick.
Walt.
This is Mr. Lou Spence, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
How are you, Mr. Diamond?
What's the matter, Spence? You want an early 4th of July?
Rick. You think I'm kidding, Mr. Diamond? You think I'm not serious about this thing?
Is that the bomb?
Right here in my lap.
He's got it rigged so it goes off the minute he relaxes his hand.
You see, I thought maybe the police would want to take it away from me. If you shoot me, try to knock me out, well, it goes off.
Then you won't mind if I take a look, huh?
Rick, please.
Stay right where you are. and I'll stay over here.
Just as you say, Mr. Spence.
Mr. Diamond, the reason you're here is because I want someone to talk to the mayor. I don't know whether it was explained to you or not, but unless His Honor has done away with himself by noon, a lot of people are going to get hurt.
Including yourself.
Oh, that doesn't really matter. You see, in making my escape, a guard attempted to stop me. I had to kill him.
He split his head open with a crowbar.
That's right.
Oh, mind if I sit down?
Not at all. But it's 4 minutes after 11. I hope you don't plan on staying too long.
Cigarette?
No, thank you.
You look like a pretty reasonable guy, Spence.
Well, thank you. It's too bad Lieutenant Levinson didn't think so when they arrested me. Now I'm going to have to show him I'm not as insane as he thought I was.
Oh, well, you'll have to excuse that, Spence. Walt thinks everybody's a little, well, you know, even me.
That's very interesting.
Oh, and with good reason. Ever take a look at his sergeant?
Mr. Diamond, when the lieutenant arrested me, I was putting an explosive under the mayor's house. He stopped me in my first attempt to rid the community of a political Judas. But now, as you see, I have a second chance.
You really think the mayor's going to jump off the city hall?
He better. And by 12 o'clock. By the way, you have 55 minutes.
Now, look, Spence,
Forget it, Mr. Diamond. I know just what you're thinking. How to get me without the bomb going off. You'll never make it. It's too well thought out. I've planned this for 4 years.
In case you're wondering how much dynamite he's got, Rick.
Oh, Mr. Diamond needs convincing. Well, under this overcoat, Mr. Diamond, are some 100 sticks.
Does the mayor know about it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, you want me to talk to him, huh?
I don't care whether you talk to him or not. I just want you to be there when he jumps.
Swell.
And just because you come back and tell me he's jumped, that isn't enough. I want his body in this room.
Walt, I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything, Rick. Just get out of here. I'm sorry I dragged you over, but I needed time.
You still do. It's 54 minutes to 12.
Clear the building, Rick.
Yes, do that, Mr. Diamond. I think the lieutenant is going to make a hero of himself.
Look, Spence, I've got till 12 o'clock, haven't I?
Unless someone tries to get me.
Oh, good. Well, then sit tight, Walt, and give me till 12.
Okay, Rick.
I hope you spend the time wisely. I'm sure you'd rather see the mayor die than your best friend.
Oh, Spence, if you forget about this, they'll probably just put you
Goodbye,
back...
Goodbye, Mr. Diamond. 53 minutes.
Okay. Walt?
Go ahead, Rick. Like you said, 53 minutes.
Goodbye, Mr. Diamond. Come back soon.
Otis.
Yeah? What's going to happen?
Clear the building.
Well, what about it, Rick?
Lieutenant wants the building cleared.
Okay. Come on, you guys. Levinson says clear the building, so we'll clear the building. Good luck, Rick.
Thanks, Charlie.
Okay, what do we do?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? It's 10 minutes after 11. In another 50 minutes, this whole building is going to get blown higher than a kite.
Okay, do something.
Huh?
Well, go ahead.
Well, I...
You see, Otis, you're in just as tough a spot as I am.
Yeah, but you're smarter than I am. You can usually come up with something.
Well, usually my problems are a puzzle, Otis. Spencer's a problem and a puzzle. I don't know about guys like him.
Well, for Pete's sake, who does?
Well, that's an idea.
Huh?
Stay here and keep close to the intercom. Don't let the lieutenant get any crazy ideas.
Hey, wait a minute. Where are you going? You're acting screwy.
Well, Otis, I'm going to go see someone who takes care of people who act screwy sometimes. Well, that's the story, George. You're a psychiatrist. What do I do now?
Well, we solved your problem with that little blonde dancer in Flatbush. Maybe we can do something about this.
Mm.
Of course, she didn't have 100 sticks of dynamite.
Oh, she didn't, huh? What do you think I talked about for 6 weeks on that couch over there? Look, George, this isn't anything like that. This is a real mess.
Now, Rick, take it easy. It's only a mess because you're used to working with something that has a pattern. Maybe not at first, but you know there's one there and you set out and find it. But with Spence, you feel there's no pattern.
Oh, there's a pattern, George. Just wait for 38 minutes, then duck.
There's no possible way to get the bomb away from him without it going off?
Not the way he tells it. He only has to relax his hand.
That's the way he tells it.
Well, I'm not going to take the chance and call him a liar. If I only knew for sure just how that bomb worked, I could reason with him.
Well, before you can reason with him, you've got to know something about him. And what do you know about Lewis Spence?
Arrested a couple of years ago for planting dynamite under the homes of some of our more prominent city officials. Found insane, sent to the state asylum, killed a guard, broke out, turned himself into a human bomb, and took a seat in the 5th Precinct Police Station.
That's all?
Well, isn't that enough?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick. I know Dr. Carroll at the state asylum. Suppose we give him a call and see what we can find out.
You think it'll help?
I don't know. It might. Operator, this is an emergency. This is Dr. George Thacker, and I want to speak to Dr. Robert Carroll at the State Asylum immediately.
What was the name again?
Dr. Robert Carroll.
One moment, please.
It'll be a minute, Rick. What time is it?
25 after. You got another phone here, George?
Yes, I've got several lines in the other office.
Good, I'll make a call. Let me know when you get Dr. Carroll on the line.
Operator, would you please hurry? I hate the use of the expression, but this is a matter of life and death.
You're on my line, Rick. Use the other phone. Yeah?
Otis?
Yeah. Where the devil are you? It's almost 11:30.
You talked to the lieutenant since I left?
Yeah, once. He wanted me to get out of the building.
Now, you just stay put until I get there. I don't want Walt to try anything stupid.
Yeah, well, I want to know what you're doing.
I'm trying to get an idea, Otis. Just one little idea.
Trying to get an idea? I suppose you've been spending the last 20 minutes sitting in Central Park waiting for one to come to you.
Rick, come in here and pick up the other phone. I've got Dr. Carroll on the line.
Bye, Otis.
I've explained the situation to him. I won't interrupt him unless I think it's necessary.
Fine. Hello, Dr. Carroll.
Mr. Diamond?
That's right. Now, Doctor, I really don't know what good this is going to do, but tell me everything you know about Lewis Spence and as fast as possible.
Well, first of all, he's an aggressive paranoid with homicidal tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
He feels persecuted by society, or rather by those who help to govern society.
Why does he feel this way?
He believes in a great many things, all of which he thinks himself capable of achieving. Our paranoiacs are frustrated to a point where they perhaps imagine themselves as capable artists or great scholars, such as in the case of Lewis Spence, society being his Judas goat.
Pardon me for interrupting, Bob, but don't you think Spence is capable of doing this sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely, George. You see, he's doing this whole thing purely because he enjoys the agony of it, but he's nonetheless ashamed.
But what about the mayor jumping off the city hall, Doctor? Just to be ridiculous for the moment, what if His Honor did jump? Would Spence then give up the bomb?
I doubt it. If the mayor jumped, it would give Spence a certain amount of satisfaction. But I still think he'd set the bomb off as a climax to his own cleverness and persecution.
Pardon again, Bob. Any usual therapy that you used on Spence?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Spence, as I've said, imagined himself a great talent. And he seemed to lean particularly toward the more artistic accomplishments, such as painting and music. In his quieter moments, we saw that he had a radio.
How does this music affect him, Bob?
He allows it to lull him into a sense of security. Sometimes even believes he's written it. You see, Mr. Diamond, he believes that his environment is against him, that it is trying to debase and degrade and persecute him. He fights off any acts of moral turpitude by becoming the thing he imagined.
Oh, I hate to break it up, boys, but it's 25 minutes to 12. I've got to leave. Thank you, Doctor.
I hope I've been some help.
Well, you've given me an idea anyway. Goodbye. Oh, miss.
Just 1 minute. I'll be right with you.
Oh, look, I'm in a hurry.
So you're in a hurry. So's everybody else. You'll have to wait until I'm through with this gentleman.
Sweetheart.
Now, look.
You look.
Oh, a badge.
Yeah, now, this is police business. Got to be in a hurry. Is that clock right?
Yeah, it's 11:45.
16 minutes, too.
All right, 16 minutes. You want to split hairs?
No, I want a portable phonograph and quick.
Okay, okay. Here's one right here on the counter. 3 speeds, interchanging.
I'll take it.
Okay, I'll go back to the storeroom and get you a new one.
Forget it. I'll take this one.
Look, mister, we got a policy here. I can't say you're nothing off the counter, supposing it don't work when you get it home.
You'll hear about it.
You see, that's just what I mean.
Well, does it play now?
Certainly, like everything. Listen. Oh, boy, that's Pete Rugolo's new arrangement. He's crazy.
Okay, okay.
Don't dig it, huh?
Give me a record by Debussy or Ravel.
Oh, no wonder. Well, let's see. We got the Engulfed Cathedral by Debussy.
No, something with a little more excitement.
All right, I'll read them off. Debussy or Ravel?
Ravel.
La Waltz, I guess. We got Bolero.
I'll take it.
Which one?
The Bolero.
Okay. I'll have to play it for you.
I've heard it.
So what? It's another policy of the store. There might be an imperfection.
Give me the record.
Hey, don't get so grabby.
Now, look there. You want me to have you locked up for obstructing justice?
Huh?
Well, unless you give me that record and this machine, this one right here, I'm going to snap the cuffs on you and haul you down to headquarters.
Oh.
You want me to do that?
Well, you can't.
All right. What's your name?
Well, take the machine and the record.
Thanks. And charge it to Lieutenant Walter Levinson, 5th Precinct, Homicide Division. If it works, you get paid. If it doesn't, don't even bother sending over a repairman.
Diamond, oh my gosh, you know what time it is.
What exactly?
Exactly 6 minutes to. What the devil you got there?
A phonograph.
A phonograph?
You talked to Walt since I left?
No. Now, what's the idea with a phonograph?
Hunch, Otis. Maybe we can save this whole mess.
Well, for Pete's sake, can I help?
Sure you can, Otis. Now, take this machine in the other room and play this record. You know how it works?
Well, I can find out.
You got less than 5 minutes to find out, so make it good. I don't want to hear anything until you're ready to let it play all the way through.
Okay. Diamond.
Yeah, yeah. Go on, go on.
Whatever you're going to do, if I louse it up, I louse up everything, huh?
You won't louse it up, Otis.
Oh, I'm so stupid, but I'll try.
Otis.
Yeah?
You don't have to wind it. Just plug it in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard about them kind.
All right, then get going.
Okay.
Yeah?
Walt, it's Diamond.
What's up?
Captain Lieutenant.
Oh, I'm getting sick of this.
Walt.
Yeah?
Relax, I want to come in.
How about it, Spence?
By all means. Have Mr. Diamond come in.
All right, Rick.
You have some news for me, Mr. Diamond?
Well, in a way, yes. Mind if I sit down?
Not at all.
How do you feel, Walt?
Dandy.
I'm afraid the lieutenant is growing uncomfortable. It is getting late, isn't it, Lieutenant?
Rick, I want you out of this building. This crackpot is...
What? Oh, wait a minute now.
What did you
wait
call
a minute.
Me?
Now, look, I've taken
what
enough...
What difference does it make now at 12 o'clock?
Well, sure it does.
Why?
Because the mayor may jump.
What?
Yes, he's locked himself in his office. They can't get him out. He just may jump.
Really, Mr. Diamond?
Well, what's the matter?
I know the mayor won't jump, no matter how many people die when I release this trigger. I just want him to have to face it the rest of his life. I want everyone like me that his kind won't let fulfill their potential talents to realize what a Judas he really is. What all men like him really are.
Well, you know, that makes sense.
Don't try to get on the good side of me, Mr. Diamond. I know what you think about me. I know what you all think. It doesn't make good sense to you or anyone else. How could it? You don't understand those of us who have a truly great talent.
Well, I'll buy that. I don't understand it.
Of course not.
Well, maybe he doesn't, Spence, but how do you know? Maybe I do.
Stop playing, Mr. Diamond. Look at the time. 5 minutes. 5 minutes and I become a martyr. We'll all get blown to kingdom come.
Rick, get out of here.
All right, Spence, I'm going to prove you're wrong.
Rick, for the love
Shut
of...
Shut up, Walt.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Diamond. What are you going to prove?
I'm going to prove that I know more about you than you think.
Of course you know a lot about me. Criminals have records.
Oh, I don't mean that. I mean more about yourself. What you think, your talents.
What do I think, Mr. Diamond? You fool. How could you know what I think?
Because a talent like yours is easy to spot.
4 minutes, Mr. Diamond.
No, it's not hard to tell about people like you.
People like me? What about people like me?
Well, Spence, I meant that, well, there are not many of them. They're few and far between. They're gifted.
What?
Certainly. There's something you have that very few are lucky enough to be gifted with.
Oh, Rick, please.
Nearly 12, Mr. Diamond.
I can tell that you are an artist, Spence.
An artist?
Yes, and a very good one.
How do you know this?
Very few people spot it. Do they, Spence?
Very few. You surprise me, Mr. Diamond.
He surprises me, too.
Walt, keep quiet.
Yes, Walt, keep quiet. It's 11:58, Mr. Diamond. You can leave because maybe you have been honest with me. Perhaps you do recognize something that...
What's the matter, Spence?
Music.
Music? I don't hear anything.
Music. Beautiful music.
Oh, I don't hear a thing, Spence. Do you, Walt?
No.
Oh, you must hear it. It's beautiful. Don't you hear that wonderful rhythm?
Now, you see, Spence, we're not as lucky as you are.
No one is. This is my music. This is what I would write if it wasn't for the people who won't let me.
What does the music sound like?
Oh, poet's words. The power and strength of death.
It makes you imagine things, doesn't it?
Yes.
You hear the music and you become powerful. Like making that bomb. Not just anybody could think of that. It takes genius.
You understand. You do understand.
Well, of course I do, but I'm still amazed. There you sit with the power of life and death in your hands, and no one can do a thing. It must be wonderful.
It is. Like the music, it's wonderful. In seconds, we'll all be torn from our earthly bonds, taken away from this dirty, filthy world to a place of clean, wonderful things like the music.
No, but you're an artist. How could you ever take a thing like that bomb and put it together?
A thing like this bomb? Oh, this is a masterpiece.
Just looks like a small box to me.
Oh, it took me weeks. Just a small box? Oh, no, you see, if my finger relaxes...
Yeah, I know about that.
But this took genius. It's not just relaxing my finger. It's how I put it together so as to get the required result. It's like the hammer action on a gun, but it's reversed.
Well, I'll be darned. You mean when you release your finger, that makes the hammer fall?
I can see you appreciate things of genius. I wish you could hear the music too, Mr. Diamond. You'd really appreciate that. It's so wonderful.
Well, tell me more about the bomb. When you release your finger and the hammer falls, what does it hit?
Well, that's a simple part. I'm surprised at you.
I just wanted to hear you tell me. After all, you invented it.
Yes. It strikes a cap. It's that simple. Simplicity can be beautiful. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Listen to that music. It builds and builds.
Tell me, Spence, what would happen if something got in the way of the hammer? I mean, between the hammer and the cap.
Nothing can. There's nothing big enough in the box that the hammer wouldn't tear right through. Simplicity, Mr. Diamond.
I'd sure like to take a look at it.
Of course. There's nothing you can do. So by all means, look.
Well, you've got glass over the end of the box.
That's right. See my finger on the trigger? If I release it, that hammer falls and strikes that cap.
Why the glass?
So I could look in when I set it and see that everything was all right.
Oh, that's very clever.
That music is getting so big, I can't think. What time is it?
Plenty of time, Spence.
Yes. When the music finishes.
It's nearly done now.
What? I thought you said you couldn't hear it.
It's a phonograph from the other room, Spence.
What?
Tell me, Spence, what happens if I jam my hand through that glass between the hammer and the cap?
What? That music! That music!
Grab him, Walt.
Let him go! Let him go! I don't understand. You cheated. You did lie. Let him go!
Well, that does it. Otis, take him away.
With pleasure.
And you, Rick.
Yeah?
How'd you know that music at work? How'd you know you could stop that hammer? How'd you know you wouldn't... Oh. Did you hurt your hand?
Well, of all the...
Well, did you?
No.
Well, all right.
You just bet it is. Goodbye.
Hi.
Rick, what are you doing here?
Well, now, that's nice. Stop by my place some afternoon and see what kind of a welcome you get.
Oh, I didn't mean that. I meant, what are you doing here so early?
Well, things were getting boring. I thought I might come over and beat you up or something.
Oh, now, isn't that sweet? Oh, Rick, what in the world have you...
Oh, the hand? Oh, it's nothing.
I know, Red Heart, but what did you do to it?
Well, I kind of hurt it.
Yes, I can see that, but how?
Playing the piano.
Oh, how could you hurt your hand playing the piano?
Well, you know how I live my songs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, truthfully, I was singing The Brother of the Wild Goose. And I got to that part about a wandering foot or a heart at rest. And while I was trying to make up my mind, my heart was resting, but my foot wandered up on the keyboard and stepped on my hand.
And stepped on your hand.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, yeah.
Well, I think you've got that bandage on just so you won't have to sing anything.
Honey, have you ever seen me not want to sing?
Well, sometimes it's a struggle.
I don't even know whether I can play or not.
Well, why don't you find out?
After lunch.
Before lunch.
Before lunch. Well, maybe I don't need that finger.
Go on.
Love is a flower that blooms so tender. Each kiss a dewdrop of sweet surrender. Love is a moment of life enchanting. Let's take that moment that tonight is granting. There's no tomorrow when love is new. Now is forever when love is true. So kiss me and hold me tight. There's no tomorrow, there's just tonight.
You like that?
So pretty.
Thank you.
Oh, that reminds me. We're having spaghetti for lunch.
Oh, good.
So kiss me and hold me tight. There's no tomorrow, there's just
Now, tell me, how did you hurt your hand?
Oh, simple. I was grabbing.
Grabbing?
Mm-hmm. Like this. Come here.
Oh, Rick.
Oh, of all times. Hello?
Hello?
Walt?
Yeah, I just thought I'd call and...
Oh, you did you? Well, you sure picked a nifty time to do it.
Oh, did I bust up something?
Yes, you did bust up something.
Well, you don't have to get sore.
Well, who's sore?
I am. That's the last time I let you do me any favor.
Okay. If that's the way you feel about it, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, what in the world was all that about?
Oh, well, honey, you see, it's like this. Walt got in some trouble, and I helped him out of it. No, you see, I don't want him to feel obligated. But, well, that's not actually it. He doesn't want me to know how he really feels. What am I trying to explain it for? I don't understand it myself.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Ed Begley played Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Also in the cast were Wilms Herbert, Francis Robinson, Stanley Waxman, Cynthia Corley, and Paul Dubov. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Today's show was written by Blake Edwards and directed by Russell Hughes. Dick Powell currently may be seen in the motion picture version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. This is Eddie King inviting you to be with us next Sunday at the same time when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. There's more great listening in store for you today on NBC. You'll hear the hilarious Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. And this evening on Theater Guild on the Air, Gertrude Lawrence and MacDonald Carey will star in Lady in the Dark. Next, hear guest star Deborah Alden on The Harvest of Stars on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime. In between now and then, there's all types of old-time radio at relicradio.com. Something new every day. Also, links to our other shows, our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.